Monday, August 28th, marked 6 months since the Haudenosaunee people of Six Nations physically repossessed what was to be Douglas Creek Estates, an upper-middle-class development project under construction on unceded Iroquois territory. Since then, people from different Aboriginal nations have visited or stayed at the sites as the negotiations between traditional chiefs and the Canadian government took place. On August 9th, one barricade was briefly erected after Judge Marshall, the main jurist who has been ruling on the standoff since the original injunctions on behalf of Henko Industries, made a ruling ordering negotiations to stop until the quote-unquote protesters vacated the site. To his dismay, nothing of the sort has occurred. Instead, the peaceful warriors remain on the land and have set up a youth camp and a cookhouse. The land has become an open community center, where large community meetings take place and decisions are reached by consensus. Furthermore, the involvement of Aboriginals from across Turtle Island has created new links and ties in the collective fight against the takeover of treaty lands by both the government and the public sector. The following interviews are with Nisha Dupree of Swant Lake and Chrissy Swain of Grassy Narrows. I'm speaking with Nisha from Ganistatun, the protected place. Nisha, you were recently at the Earth Justice Gathering up in Grassy Narrows. I was wondering whether you could tell us a little bit about that and what took place.
Sure. This was an Earth Justice Gathering. It was the people from the Rainforest Action Network and Forest Ethics that brought this gathering together and invited some people from different organizations, a variety of different people to come to this gathering, and I heard that they were having this gathering, so I emailed them, you know, expressing interest that, you know, a few of us would like to attend this place of meeting to discuss Aboriginal rights and, you know, what's happening to the land and what's happening to the earth, and discuss, you know, what we can do together to help each other network and create alliances. There was approximately 16 of us that ended up traveling up to Grass Narrows. A lot of the people from Six Nations, it was their first time traveling to anywhere up north, and a lot of them have expressed that, you know, they've never seen so many trees and such beautiful land up north. A lot of us have traveled during the nighttime, so a lot of us weren't able to see the clear cuts, but I'll get that towards the end. It was a gathering where they had a variety of workshops, and a lot of participation took place, and a lot of people from Six Nations, like, we mainly went swimming because we did a lot of networking around the fires, and a lot of us participated in these workshops, but a lot of us were able to, like, you know, spend a lot of time with the land, you know, reconnecting, you know, talking with the people of Grassy Narrows, the youth, the elders. And then there was on July 13th, they had this blockade where we wanted to bring awareness to Weyhauser and Abitibi that, you know, the clear cutting that's taking place in traditional territories in the Whiskey Jack Forest is destroying the way of life of the Anishinaabe people, and it's also destroying the life, the circle of life of the animals that, you know, live in the forest. It also contaminates the waterways. Grassy Narrows has a history of mercury contamination, where the people are being poisoned, the land is being poisoned, and it's really concerning to the people in the Whiskey Jack Forest, Grassy Narrows, and surrounding areas. So a blockade took place from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. where the OPP reassured the people that, you know, that no, there would be no arrests being made, that it would just be, you know, a place, you know, to bring awareness. A logging truck was stopped, and one of the ladies, she went in, you know, shackled herself underneath the Weyhauser truck. And a lot of us people from Six Nations, we were in Grassy Narrows all afternoon because we were meeting with the youth and elders at the community center. And so we didn't get there till like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. A few of us knew of the blockade that was going to take place on TransCanada, but a lot of us were left out in the dark, you know, for security reasons. We didn't want any leakage, so we just kind of, like, you know, kept it quiet and we didn't say nothing. We showed up at the blockades, and it was good. A lot of us, like myself, I kind of like dolled myself up, you know, covered my face, and, you know, from the histories of getting pepper sprayed and whatnot from Caledonia. We had people from different territories that came together. It was people from Mishkilamang, Ojibwe Nation of Saugeen, people from Kettle Point, Stony Point that were up there, people from Fort William First Nations. It was people from, like, all over. It was good. Like, you know, it was a good protest. It was, like, nobody got hurt. It was peaceful. You know, drums were played. Guitars were played. So, anyways, the next day what happened was that, Redman had to go sign in to the Cayuga. From the Cayuga OPP, we thought arrangements were made for him to go sign in at the OPP station and, you know, go to the station and come out and then take off. It didn't happen like that. We got to the OPP station and what happened was that Redman went in to the Kenora OPP and he never came out. And that's when, you know, it just began from there. I had my medicine blanket with me, and I had my feather with me. And my friend, Miss Nice Day, she had her own medicine blanket with her. And we had another guy with us, his name was Wade. So it was four in total that went to Kenora OPP to go sign our friend in. We started questioning, you know, like why our friend wasn't coming out of the police station and they wouldn't answer us. They wouldn't really give us any answers. And there was a lot of OPPs that were, you know, in the parking lot. And, you know, there was only four of us, two men, two women. And what happened was that we started getting, you know, a little, you know, like excited, I guess, because we were like trying to figure out like why they're not releasing our friend or not telling us where he's gone or what happened to him. So I started walking up and down in the parking lot, you know, in a peaceful manner, of course. And, you know, my friend, Miss Nice Day, she started writing down, you know, badge numbers of the police that were in the parking lot surrounding us. And there was also, you know, OPPs in the office that were, you know, videotaping us when we were, like, walking in the parking lot. We weren't doing nothing.
How did the police react to the rest of you who were simply asking about why your friend was not being released?
They reacted like they were on a power trip. Like, you know, we were there as mean people. They were on a defense. Like, they were really offensive. They were really cocky, you know. They had this attitude towards us. And I don't think it was just because, you know, like, we were the people that were from the blockade, but it was just like the general people of, you know, of people that are standing up for the land and standing up for the waterways and the trees, that this is, you know, how they feel about us. And they were aggressive towards us, like verbally. You can just tell that they were trying to be nice, but you could just see that they were just pissed.
The police said that there were going to be no arrests made vis-a-vis the blockade on the Trans-Canada Highway to raise awareness about the clear-cutting of Weyerhaeuser and Abitibi Consolidated. Did they keep to their promise?
No.
What happened?
A lot of us were arrested, like, you know, the following day. And actually, it was pretty interesting because the OPP just piled in. Like, you know, they had OPP from Sulaco, Ignace, Dryden, Kenora, Red Lake. They had OPP from, like, the whole entire northwestern Ontario region in Kenora, Ontario. And it was weird because, like, you know, you still have to travel from, like, you know, Kenora to Grassy Narrows, which is about, like, an hour or 20-minute ride. And the thing is that when you're traveling down that highway, all you seen was OPPs, you know, like every, like, you know, like, I don't know, 10 miles, you know, there'd be an OPP parked along the road, parked along a train track, parked along, you know, like, just, it was weird. It was fascinating to know that, you know, like, our people, you know, just by our people gathering and just hanging out and stuff, it causes such a great concern to the OPP because, you know, that's their biggest fear, you know. Canada and the U.S. is their biggest fear, you know, the unity of our people. Because once our people do come together, you know, like, unite, you know, everything's going to change. Everything. And a lot of people don't understand that, you know, we're not doing this for ourselves. You know, we're doing this for everybody, man, like, everybody. The water. Water is water. And then you have the trees. The trees, you know, the softwood lumber, the boreal forest, you know, it's the virgin forest. It's the uncut forest. And it's being clear-cutted, but, like, mad. you know, without consideration to the people that actually live in the forest, exist off the forest, who trap, who fish, who, like, you know, who hunt. You know, it's just completely, you know, gone. But then you have these people in parliament, and you have these people, you know, like these members of parliament that don't see it. You know, I mean, they're only in office for like 4 years until they get booted out, or, you know, until they get reelected and whatnot. But they don't take into consideration, you know, like the whole entire situation. And that's what we're trying to do. That's what we're doing, is that, you know, we're creating awareness, not just to the people of our generation, but to the next generation, empowering them, because we're clearing the way for the next generation, you know, because when they stand up and say, you know, like, hey, you know, hello, you know, heads will turn and say, yeah, what's going on? You know, and they won't be as treated as the way we're being treated today. Like, look at, like, you know, we're in Caledonia right here, you know, like, we're under constant surveillance. Constant surveillance of the OPP. We have helicopters, we have, you know, we have people, like, you know, from hate, you know, this what do you call it, Caledonia Wake Up. We had this man yesterday, you know, with a video camera recording us, you know, from behind the site. And one of the people from here, you know, one of the security dudes went up there, and when they went up there, that guy was screaming at the OPP, you know, like, do your job, you know, do your fucking job, you know, go get them, you know, like, you know, call the military. And then you have these kinds of people. So you have, like, these grotesque people that don't even see what the hell's going on. You know, to him, it's just like, you know, like, advocating for, you know, this one little piece of land, you know, but, you know, it's so much bigger than that, you know, because what's happening here in Six Nations, it is going to affect all our nations, you know, because I'm from the Ojibwe Nation, I'm from Northwestern Ontario, and, you know, what the decisions that are going to be made here is definitely going to help us up north, because right now, we're dealing with the same people in Caledonia. We're dealing with the Premier, Dalton McGuinty, who's selling our lands up north. You know, it's called a Northern Prosperity Plan, you know, like, where he's opening, you know, our land to privatization, you know, like, and selling it to, you know, to the Americans for tourism. You have, you know, Dave Ramsey, who's like the Aboriginal Affairs dude, but before he was, you know, the Minister of Natural Resources, where he would approve all these, you know, like, these land deals, like, you know, in regards to mining and forestry. And did he talk to me? No. Did he talk to my family? No. He didn't talk to any of us. And we're the caretakers of the land, and they just don't seem to understand that. And then you have, like, you know, like, what's his name there? Jim Prentice. You know, before that you had Andy Scott. And then you have, like, you know, Stephen Harper, you know, the top dude there. The one that's going around, you know, all around the world there making all these promises, you know. It's not even his land to discuss. It's not his trees. Ugh. They just don't understand. If they can bottle up error, you know, they probably would, and they'd probably sell it for $5 each. You know, it's all about money. Money, money, money. But money pays the rent. Money pays the hydro. Money pays the phone, the cell phone, the gas bill, blah, 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 blah. I mean, we all have to survive, you know, but you don't have to slaughter land, you know, while doing it.
How does it make you feel as someone who sees how the media has been treating this Six Nations reclamation site, when the Caledonia Citizens Alliance, a small group in Caledonia, can somehow get a meeting with Dalton McGuinty, and who is always, they're always on the press, saying things like, oh, people are armed here, when they're not, things like that?
Well, first of all, we're not armed. Like, you know, that has to be, like, you know, sent out to the world. Like, you know, there's nothing here. We don't even have a bow and arrow. Come on. Like, and that's one of the questions I ask these guys, you know, like, where are your bow and arrows? Like, shouldn't you guys have, like, 500 bow and arrows made by now? You know, or something? And they're like, no, we don't have nothing, man, because we're speaking from our hearts. You know, we're speaking with good minds, and that's all we need. And I'm like, yep, sounds good. Sounds good to me. But, you know, like, what the people are doing, you know, like, the media and whoever's, you know, out there listening to these Caledonians that are saying, you know, like, all this, they're nice. Ad-libbing, you know? And, you know, like, that's what happened in Ipperwash, you know? Like, Queen's Park received a phone call saying, you know, that they had, you know, like, whatever they had. And it was just, like, you know, gossip. It was gossip. And they fed on it. And now they're doing the same thing to us. And that's one of the things that, you know, somebody was telling me. He said that everything that they did to the people in Wounded Knee, everything in Gustison Lake, Iprawash, Oka, all these different crises, you know, where our people, you know, stood up. They're using all of that knowledge on us all at once. You know, because they're trying to break us. They're trying to break our spirits. And you know what? That's one thing that, you know, the government cannot do is break, you know, a person's spirit. It's up to the person whether they want to take it or leave it. Caledonia is trying to break our spirits by, you know, making us look bad, talking bad about us. But you know what? The bottom line, you know, if you were to grab a handful of Caledonians and walk them through the land and explain to them exactly, you know, like, you know, heart to heart, you know, like, they would understand, you know, they'd be like, oh, that's what's happening. Well, the inside out, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If they were to see the inside out, you know, their minds would change. You know, they would see everything, you know, from a different point of view. You know, and then also learning the history of the Iroquois people, the history of the Anishinaabe people, the history of different nations, you know, and knowing, you know, like, finding out, you know, like, how Canada really treated, you know, us people, you know, through residential school era. You know, we got beat, we got tortured, a lot of us got killed. You know, after that didn't work, you know, for the assimilation policy, they tried, you know, which is the 60s, 70s, 80s scoop. You know, I was part of that, you know, 70s scoop. You know, I got taken away when I was 2 years old, and I was shipped into white family. I was raised by Ottawa. So, you know, like, the whole, like, you know, everything, you know, I see. And when you're, like, raised in a different world, a white world, they don't tell you nothing about, you know, like, the people in Canada. They don't tell you nothing about the history. As far as Canada is concerned, you know, history began when Christopher Columbus, you know, set foot on this land. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And to us, Christopher Columbus, he's, like, the number one terrorist. You know, like, the like, you know, what... how they portray him, like, you know, even at John Smith, at Pocahontas, you know, those were, like, men of war that went to different countries, like, you know, conquered wars, and then they took all the leftovers, and then they put them on the boat, and they shipped them off. Well, I mean, that's my version. But anyways, and then they came here, and they were sick. You know, they had their own sicknesses, their own diseases, and we took them in, and we treated them, we healed them, we helped them live, and this is a thank you we got. You know, we're getting pushed and pushed and pushed. We're getting squeezed into, you know, tighter little confined, you know, what do you call these concentration camps called reservations. And we're expected to, you know, live happy, be happy, and live forever. But, you know, how can you do that when your land is being taken away from you? And that's when, you know, people like us, we just say, you can't do that, man. I talked to my grandma talked to her grandma, and it all comes down to the bottom line, you know, like, this is wrong, and you guys know it. Now it's time for you to stand up and be held accountable and responsible for what you have done to the people of Canada. The original people of Canada. Us. And whatever the media says, don't believe it. There's a lot of media blackout, you know. A lot of people do not know, do not want other people to know what's going on in here. There's, like, a lot that, you know, a lot of people do not want to know what's going on in here. Because what's happening in here, it's positive, it's inspiring, it's empowering, it's knowledge sharing, it's heartfelt, it's good, and you know what? It's strong. But you know what? We know it. And we don't have to explain ourselves to anybody, you know, because it's good. You know, it's having a good heart, a good mind, and being able to speak confidently and let Canada know, you know, like, we are not alone, because there's a lot of us that think alike.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
What I would say is, I don't know, just do your research, man, because you know what? A lot of stuff that's being circulated, it comes from a place that, you know, maybe, you know, some elders probably sitting on the stump crying, you know, right now. When you look at the water, you know, every time, like, you know, I heard in Montreal you guys are having a water, pool water crisis. You know, and our people up in Northern Ontario, you know, we've been dealing with, you know, like water crises for like the longest time. And it's only until it hits, you know, a metropolitan area or urban area that it's only brought, you know, attention to. You know, what happened to Keshechewan, you know, when they had to evacuate, you know, that was a major crisis. But it took a major crisis, you know, for it to come to light. And I think, you know, we have to, you know, start, you know, encouraging, you know, these people in Parliament to, like, you know, take their role seriously. You know, if you call your MP, make sure they call back. If you send emails, you know, photocopy that, you know, to prove that, you know, leave a paper trail. Show them and let them know, you know, like you're there. Because, you know, we can't do it by ourselves. You know, us as a nation, you know, like, we can only do so much. So it's up to yourselves to help yourselves.
I'm speaking with Chrissy Swain. Chrissy Swain is an Aboriginal activist from Grassy Narrows, located near Kenora, Ontario, up north. Can you give us an update on the blockade in Grassy Narrows? I know that this blockade is the longest standing blockade in Canada. It was originally erected in 2002. and it against like two major forestry companies, Weyerhaeuser and Abitibi Consolidated. It's now 2006. Can you tell us in a nutshell how the struggle has been going against these two companies?
It feels like we're not really, it feels still right now because nobody's like doing anything. Like we've been still doing the roving blockades. Like we did that Trans-Canada Highway and then we did the bridge, and it just feels like it's just still, you know, on their end it's still, but then for us, like we're still standing there and that's just how it is.
Have the blockades successfully stopped the clear cutting and the contamination of waters by these two companies, or have they merely found other routes, or what exactly?
They moved further away from the community, like kind of like on the outer part of our, like on the ends of our territory. Like they moved like north, and in order for us to get out there, it takes a couple of hours. So that's why we did the Separation Lake Bridge.
What was that?
We blocked the Separation Bridge for like 2 days. And that had a big impact on them because that was like their main access, and they were protesting outside of the OPP, you know, like we're losing 20 grand a day, whatever, you know. But I don't know, it's like I think like right now where we are, there's only a few of us that have that fire to keep going, you know. And a lot of people think that it had stopped, but then it didn't. Like people don't realize that it's still going on, you know, on our territory. And there was a guy that was out camping near there, like where they're logging, and he said he could just hear, you know, them working all night, all day, like. And people don't believe that it's happening, like from our community, because they can't see it, like it's further up north. And so it's like us trying to bring them there. And when we did go to the Separation Lake Bridge, like there was only a handful of us from Grassy that were there, like, and it ended too soon, you know. Like we ended up getting raided when people were trying to come, like the police weren't letting them in, or it was just really messed up, I guess.
Are you talking about the Earth Justice gathering that took place recently? And
no, it was after the Earth Justice gathering, because when we did the Trans-Canada Highway, that was during the Earth Justice gathering. But after that, like probably a week and a half after that, we went and blocked the Separation Lake Bridge.
Okay. And that's when the raid onto Grassy Narrows took place?
Mm-hmm.
Could you talk about that raid a little bit?
No, it wasn't on the reserve that it took, like where they raided us. They raided us right on the bridge. Like they came in, and they came in there like as if we had like firearms or weapons, whatever. And when they came in, all I was doing was just sitting there singing, you know. And there was like just mainly women and children there. There was only one man there. And they came in there like as if we were like conspiring to do something, you know. Like we were packing up our stuff, and somebody was actually going to be taking me to the hospital because I was getting sick. And they came in there, they're yelling at like the kids too, like they're like, children to the side, you know. And my daughter was just standing there screaming. I had my baby in front of me, and like I didn't even have time to get up, and I was placed under arrest, you know. And another lady just came and grabbed my baby and took her to the side, and one of the girls that were there with us from Winnipeg.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there obviously has been like a very strong clampdown on nonviolent direct action of taking back your land or fighting for your land rights. And
I was surprised because the police, like, they've always, they've never bothered us, you know. But then it feels like just, you know, this time when there's, like, outsiders helping us, like, supporters coming in, is, like, the way I feel like is that they want to divide us, like, because it's their own kind, you know, that are coming in and helping us, like, make that stand, you know, just to be there and to be bodies there. And like they want to take that apart, because like I think, like, you know, when it's just us from Grassy Narrow standing there, I feel like we're not heard. But then, you know, when these people came in to help us, it was like, it was all over the media, it was everywhere, you know, and they didn't like that. They had to like pull us apart because we were being too loud, you know, like, I feel like that was their goal, and it was accomplished, because anybody that's trying to come into Grassy right now, they're being stopped by Dryden, they're being stopped at the borders, they're being stopped on the highway, you know, just anywhere. Like, where are you going? If they say Grassy Narrows, they're like, they're interrogated, or they're like, don't go there, you know, like. And there was like few people that tried to cross the border, and they were told, you know, if you go, you can't be at any protests or be blocking any roads, you know. It's just like, it's like they're just trying to just like make us be alone, you know, and so that we're not heard what we're trying to do, you know. like to be raided in that way, you know, for a minor charge, like that's messed up.
How do you feel like this Earth Justice Gathering and the blockades that took place both on the Trans-Canada Highway and also on the Separation Bridge, I mean, do you feel like it was a success, despite the fact that people were charged and raided and so on? Do you think that you got your voices heard, and that this will have an impact on Weyerhaeuser and ABTB and beyond?
Yeah, like, I feel like, you know, we got them shaking anyways, because, like, I don't think, like, you know, these companies or like the government or whatever, I don't think they really take it seriously, you know, that they think we're just like another, like we're a bunch of Indians, you know, blocking roads or whatever. But like when we first started this, we knew that we were gonna be in it for like the long run, you know, like we prepared ourselves spiritually, you know, because like it's gonna be a long battle, like even not in my generation but in my children and their children, because if we get rid of these companies, there's gonna be other ones coming back, you know. And mm-hmm. I feel like it's just something that we started and that's never gonna end, like
mm-hmm. I mean, aside from this Trans-Canada Highway, there hasn't really been much news about Grassy. How do you feel about this?
I don't really, like, you know, think about it being on the news. Like, to me, being on the news is like, it's not a big deal, you know. I still feel like our fight is really strong because we're still there. Like, it's been 4 years, we're still there. Mm-hmm. And you know what the media wants is like action, you know, but like we want to do this in a peaceful way. And how we keep ourselves going is like we have our ceremonies, we put our tobacco down, you know, we do all that. And I feel like we're successful in our own community because we're bringing all that stuff back. Like, we're bringing back our ceremonies, we're bringing back, you know, teaching the young people to live off the land, you know, we're bringing back what we were fighting for, like mm-hmm. So that's why I feel like we're successful, like.
You obviously probably have heard about the struggle going on in Six Nations Caledonia. How do you feel about this? How has it contributed to the struggle in Grassy Narrows? Has Grassy Narrows contributed to the struggle at Six Nations? What are your thoughts on the repossession of Douglas Creek Estates?
I think, you know, that all our issues are the same. Like, we're all taking back what was rightfully ours, and them coming to Grassy was, you know, unity. And that's like one thing that you know, when they came up there, they were the targets. The people from Six Nations were the targets. They were the first ones to get arrested over there. Like, I think it scared them. Like, it scared the government, it scared, you know, the police, whatever, like, because we were, like, we had links. I think it's awesome, like, and to learn each other's, you know, like, to learn each other's backgrounds and stuff like that, you know. And it's really neat because long time ago, like, we were enemies, like, way back then, and then here we are, you know, like, we're fighting together, you know, like.
Chrissy, thank you very much for speaking with me today.
You're welcome.